Hello there. Sorry for the delay. Just as Cheryl was turning over the mic, Jamie came in filthy. And since she jumps in my bed, you know, I couldn't just leave her that filthy. So I had to holler up at Jasmine, ask Jasmine to give her a bath. But happy Sunday, everyone. So here we are. And Jamie's barking. She must think she's getting a walk instead of a bath because that was her happy bark. And she does not happy bark for baths. So she must misunderstand what Jasmine is doing for her. Anyway, guess what? Tonight we are starting step two. Ever since I've started this teaching, which was probably in January, we have been working through the first 213 quotes, which were in step one. And again, the real purpose of step one is to point out to us that the mind ain't gonna awaken. That's just not how it's done. And the two primary focuses as the guidance came through me when I contemplated step one was, one, it's not about intellectual understanding. And two, the mind wanting so much to be enlightened can draw us into a, you know, false enlightenment, a thinking we're enlightened type of thing. And this is something we want to just be aware of and watch out for and, you know, make sure we don't fall into that little trap. So, tonight we start step two, and here is the objective of step two. Know that the world is a dreamlike illusion. Uh-oh, what dog attacking me? Okay, Jamie? She seems happy, huh? She's happy to get away from Jasmine. Okay. All right. Step two. Uh-oh, wait. Here she comes again. Okay. Oh, she's not the best bather in the world. Your butt's still all dirty. And you're going to go upstairs and tell Jasmine you want another bath? Say, my butt's dirty. I'm only half clean. I think Danielle's going to take care of it. All right. Back to work. All right. So again, step two, know that the world is a dreamlike illusion. Know that all of the following are dreamlike illusions. The world is a dreamlike illusion. The body is a dreamlike illusion. The universe is a dreamlike illusion. All dimensions are dreamlike illusions. All events, motions, and actions are dreamlike illusions. Time is a dreamlike illusion. Almost all of the words in a dictionary describe dreamlike illusions. That is the objective for step two. So why don't we go into a little bit of silence? Amen. I don't know if you guys could hear Jamie, but she came in from Danielle's wipe down and during the quiet time and ran around me a couple times and kind of kissed me and then ran around me again and kissed me and then plopped down on the floor next to me. Oh, Danielle's going to get her some more. Sorry, Jamie. You need to be cleaned. All right. So, we are going to start tonight with quote number 214. We are in step two. The first teacher that we will be listening to is Sri Ramana Maharshi. And actually, the exact words are coming from the book, The Garland of Guru's Sayings, which if you've known me for a long time, then you'll remember that that I love this book. The Garland of Guru's Sayings is one of my very favorite books. And the person who actually wrote the book is named Muru Ganar. What he did was he took Ramana's teachings and put them in poetic form, and then Ramana approved them. So they're still called Ramana's teachings, but the words are actually the poet's, Muru Ganar's. Let me give you a link to number 214. Now, of course, the link I'm giving you is not to the Seven Steps to Awakening. It is to my journal. And if you've been sitting here listening to Cheryl, you know what I'm talking about. If you're listening on the radio and you would like to join us in the journal, the link is RDA7. That is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Again, the address is RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. We are on step two, so you can click on step two. And then you'll want to click on the number sequence that will allow you to start with number 214 and find your way to 214. And Jamie is settled down now, so I think we can begin. All right, here is the first quote from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. From your true being as awareness, alienated and deluded, do not pursue appearances, deeming them as real. They are false, since disappear they must. But your own being as awareness is real and cannot cease to be. So again, from your true being as awareness, alienated and deluded. So what is being said here, of course, is that we always are that true being awareness, right? We're that true being awareness, but we could be in that state of mind that is called alienated and deluded, right? But that doesn't change the fact that we still are the real being. From your true being as awareness, alienated and deluded, do not pursue appearances, deeming them as real. They are false, since disappear they must. But your own being as awareness is real and cannot cease to be. All right then, let's have a look at the journal. It is time for withdrawal from the world. One cannot remain fully invested in the world and see that it is illusion also. One must pull back from that investment. Let mind attention be interested only in diving inward towards silence, seeing obstacles and removing them as they emerge. Let current moment guidance pull the strings of the puppet body without letting the puppet's movements distract from the function of inner focus. So in India, it was very, very popular to relinquish the world, to really, completely abstain from the world, to leave your family, leave your job, become a beggar, have no possessions except for your clothes and maybe your begging bowl. And this was really regarded as a high spiritual choice. But in Ramana Maharshi's lifetime, He used to teach that true relinquishment was in the mind. True relinquishment is in the mind. Which means that what he called a householder could also practice relinquishing the world. You do not have to leave your family. You don't have to leave your job. You know, that may not be your calling. And yet you can still relinquish the world. Because true relinquishment is in the mind. So with that in mind, if we look again at what the journal says, it is time for withdrawal from the world. One cannot remain fully invested in the world and see that it is illusion also. One must pull back from that investment. So what I would recommend to anyone who says within themselves that I feel that my heart is calling me to do that. I want to relinquish the world, you know, in the mind. I want to relinquish the world in the mind. Well, then what I would recommend is first looking to see where your investments are. There's probably a large number of investments in the world, and they may not all be seen at once. There may be some that there isn't immediate willingness to drop it right now. We have to give our willingness to relinquish that investment. It may seem to take time. But I think that probably one thing that I do not feel is helpful at all, if awakening is truly the goal, is the old saying, to talk the talk but not walk the walk. To talk spirituality, to talk the world is not real, and yet to still find the mind very concerned about politics or world issues or even your children's lives, to be honest. You know, that is not relinquishing the world. Of course, I'm a parent. And I'm a parent of a child who is still at home. I'm not the parent of an adult. And so there are still things I need to do to guide Jasmine. Like right now, I am teaching her to drive. But we can fulfill these roles without the investment. The investment is more of a sense of control, more of a sense of wanting things to go our way. Maybe in the case of a child, wanting the children to make certain decisions regarding career choices, regarding sports choices, regarding friend choices, you know, wanting them to be a certain person. I had this attachment when Jasmine was much younger, and Holy Spirit led me when she was around age 8 to let that go. So I know what it feels like to let go of that attachment of wanting your children to be a certain person. But that's an investment in the world, to be honest. Now, it's funny because just like Ramana Maharshi said that we can relinquish the world and yet still be with family, still be, you know, working a job. In fact, in one example that I saw him discuss, even a very prominent job like a government treasurer, that means there is a difference between doing the tasks that we do as a part of that job and having an investment. And again, that is also true for parenting. Again, a parent has a task to guide. And sometimes a parent has a task to administer consequences for actions. But that is different from having an internal investment in the choices our children make. When we are relinquishing the world, we may, for example, tell a teenager, you know, it's not at all helpful for you to, you know, to do drugs. I'll pick that example. It's not at all helpful for you to do drugs. And the best thing for you to do is to stay away from drugs. And, you know, of course, to focus on school and you know, do your schoolwork. That's what's most helpful to you now. And it's perfectly appropriate for a parent to say that. And then let's assume for a moment that we have a child that does not heed that advice. So we have a child that does drugs and the child is, you know, caught. At this point, we won't go into an addiction problem, just caught smoking some pot. It may be then very appropriate for the parent to say, it's really important that you do not do drugs. This is not going to be helpful to you. So, you know, what I'm going to do in this case is I'm going to take away these privileges. I'm going to, you know, remind you again that this is not the most helpful choice in the world. There are other choices that you can make. Maybe we give some good examples of why, even learning from our own experience. But we still cannot control the choice the child makes. We continue to guide. We don't give up on the guiding. If there is some type of an addiction problem that arises, maybe then we start seeking some type of help, some type of counseling. Maybe we send the child to choose again if they're willing. You know, who knows? But that does not mean there has to be an investment. You see, we can play our role without that investment inside of us, in our head, in our mind. And for me, the best way to do that is to remember a few things. One, I don't know anything. I don't know what anyone's path is. I don't know how eventually they will get to the point of making the choice of awakening. Everyone is what we call spirit or life or isness. The world is just a temporary form that is leading us to that realization. And everyone, including my child, is free within that form. When I have these thoughts in my mind, I can watch people make choices that my mind says that choice is a mistake, that choice is going to bring them pain, and maybe it does, but I can allow them to make the choice anyway. If it's my place, like it is with a child, I may tell them this choice is going to bring pain. This choice is going to bring suffering. You're making it harder in yourself with the choices you're making. It could be easier. But once I've done my part, even if my part continues, like with a parent, I then have to leave the choosing to them. So again, each one of us needs to look and say, where the heck am I invested? Where the heck am I wanting the world to move in the direction that I want the world to move in? Is it politics? Is it environment? Is it my spouse? Is it my children? Is it my parents? Is it my neighbors? My friends, where do I want the world to move in the direction that I want the world to move in? And that's where we are invested, and that's where we need to relinquish our investment, even if the body still has a role to play, because it is a part of our function like parenting. It is time for withdrawal from the world. One cannot remain fully invested in the world and see that it is illusion also. One must pull back from that investment. Let mind attention be interested only in diving inward towards silence. So this talks about where our attention is to be throughout the day. regardless of what activity we seem to be involved in. Regardless of whether we are dealing with a child whom, you know, has just been caught doing drugs. We're still focused within, we're focused on our own silence, even while we're talking to the child. If we notice that our own silence does not seem present because there is ego upset, right? Well, then the next part of this sentence applies. Let mind attention be interested only in diving inward towards silence, seeing obstacles and removing them as they emerge. So we see the mind is upset, we see we are fearful, we see we have an attachment, we recognize there is an attachment. We allow our inner guidance to guide us in relaxing regarding that attachment so that it can be loosened and released. And we're doing this even while we're in conversation with the child. Our focus is always here. And if our focus should run away from here for a moment to the seeming problem at hand, as soon as we notice that, we bring our attention back. This is our function. Let mind attention be interested only in diving inward towards silence, seeing obstacles and removing them as they emerge. Let current moment guidance pull the strings of the puppet body. The way that works for me is an inner checking. An inner checking, which is very well taught in the teachings of Inner Ramana. I don't necessarily use the full sentences that are in Inner Ramana, but the intention is there. It's an inner checking of, what am I to do now? How am I to see this? What am I to say, or how am I to respond? Instead of running off with the ego's perception and the ego mind and the ego attachments, the ego investment, pausing and checking. Jasmine became very upset at me about a week ago. Some of you may have heard the first part of this story because it happened to occur on the day that I was interviewed by Jennifer Hadley on Unity Radio. So if you listened to that interview, you heard the first part of the story. Jasmine is learning to drive. And we were going to school, which is, you know, during the time when you're going to school here, there's two schools right near each other. So there's a lot more traffic on the road than there normally is, you know, because everybody's taking their kid to school, or all the kids are driving to school if they're old enough. And there's this one particular intersection where there's a yield sign. And Jasmine, as a new driver, kind of had it in her mind that you don't have to stop at a yield sign, you yield. And she did glance each direction, but we all know how blind spots work. She glanced in each direction and then pulled out into traffic. And she actually came very close, within a foot or so of hitting a car. Very close. And of course, you know, this scared her. I said something like, you know, I don't remember my exact words, but somehow I communicated the idea to her that it would have been best to stop in this case because the roads are busier now and she couldn't see well. It would have been best to stop. And she became very upset at me, and I think I tried to say something again, and she was very upset, and I'm sure her upsetness came from her fear and probably her guilt, right? Fear and guilt. And instead she projected onto me and she was very angry at me. And I did an inner checking. And the inner checking basically said, you know, again, there's no words. It's an intuition, but I can't tell you unless I put it into words. But I don't want people to think I heard these words, right? But the inner checking basically said, the moment has passed. Wait until she's, you know, wait until another time. Wait until another time. The moment has passed. Wait until another time. So I dropped it. Later in the evening, I felt like it was time to go and talk to her, and she was still extremely upset. And every time I would try to bring it up, she would say, I'm not listening. I'd say, but Jasmine, we need to. I'm not listening. But Jasmine, this is really, I'm not listening. Right? The only thing she said to me other than that was, do you know why I'm so upset? And this is when she started crying. She says, I could have killed you and that makes me feel terrible. You know. So I did some inner checking. And of course, the inner checking, in this case, you know, let me know that this conversation needed to happen, but it didn't have to happen face to face. The inner checking kind of let me know that I could ask her to email me and we could have the conversation that way. So it went something like this. Jasmine, we need to, I'm not listening, talk about this. I'm not listening. So here's what you can do. I'm not listening. You're not allowed to, I'm not listening, drive until, I'm not listening. We have this, I'm not listening conversation, but I'm not listening. You can't email, I'm not listening, me and tell me, I'm not listening, what you learned and I'm not listening. That will do. And then I walked away. So it went. Within half an hour, I had an email from her, right, Danielle? We don't know how quick, because Danielle and I actually had to get in the car and go to the Center for Inner Peace. But when I got to the Center for Inner Peace, I checked, and there was already an email from her telling me what she learned. You know? So you see, I was able to do my job. I was not invested, but there was a job that had to be done. I was able to do the job, and inner guidance, inner checking, showed me how to do the job effectively. And I'm sure you guys can imagine how this would have gone if I had, you know, I'm not listening. You damn well are going to listen. And, you know, we started going that way, right? That would, of course, come from investment. Investment maybe in having her listen, you know, having her respect me. So let mind attention be interested only in diving inward towards silence. Let mind attention be interested only in diving inward towards silence. Seeing obstacles and removing them as they emerge. Let current moment guidance pull the strings of the puppet body, without letting the puppet's movements distract from the function of inner focus. So my job is always to be inner focused, no matter what appears to be going on around me, right? No matter what appears to be going on around me, my job is to be inner focused. This is how we relinquish our investment in the world, by staying inward focused. All right, enough said. Let's scroll down. And on the left, you will see a 215. You can click on the 215, and I will post the link in the room. All right, first I'm going to read number 215 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. The world appears distinctly only in wakefulness and dream with concepts filled. In concept free, all empty sleep, one sees no world. So then conceptual is the world's whole substance. And if you're not familiar with the language of Ramana Maharshi or Muruganar, this could be confusing because it seems like it says when you're awake, you're dreaming, and when you're asleep, you're awake. But they are using an analogy here to like how we go to bed every night and we go to sleep. When we are awake, like right now, you look around and you see a world, right? I see Danielle sucking on a watermelon slushie, and I see Jamie passed out quietly on the floor, and you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So when you're awake, you see the world, right? But at night, when you're in a deep sleep, there is no world for you. So this is the analogy. You know, there is no world. There is no thinking mind at that point. The mind is completely at rest, and you see no world. So the world appears distinctly only in wakefulness and dream, right? That's the other time you see it, is when you are asleep, but the mind is active and you're dreaming. You can see a world in your dream. So the world appears distinctly only in wakefulness and dream, with concepts filled. In concept free, when the mind is not active, all empty sleep, or we call it deep sleep, one sees no world. So then, conceptual is the world's whole substance. Right? The world only exists for us when the mind is working. This is what is being said, when the mind is active. In deep sleep, it is not active and there is no world. All right, let's look at the journaling. Number 215. What proof do I have that the world is a projection of concepts? And without concepts, there is no world. Now, one thing some of you may know about me, but I will go ahead and state it here, is that I have decided that I am done with believing. And what I mean by that is not just that I am done with my old beliefs, but I'm not going to replace old beliefs with new spiritual beliefs. In other words, A Course in Miracles may tell me the world is not real, but that is not enough for me to then run around and say, hey, the world is not real, the world is not real, the world is not real. I have decided that I want my own experience of that. I am not going to take intellectual knowledge, turn it into belief, and then spout it out as if I know it. So that's why when I'm even faced with, you know, Ramana Maharshi and Muruganar together, who there probably are no two teachers that I love more than the two of them, and here they are together. But when my two favorite teachers say to me that without concept there is no world, I do not take that on as a belief even from their lips. I say, what proof do I have that the world is a projection of concepts, and without concepts there is no world? I begin looking to my own experience to say, is there anything to verify or to even point in the direction of what my teachers are telling me? Am I aware of as much world as I once was when I was attached to more concepts? Now, remember, this is a personal journal, my journal. And one thing that has happened for me is there has been a lot of what we call forgiveness. A lot of seeing ideas that I once believed in, and seeing for myself through my own experience that they are not true ideas, and releasing those ideas. And as I release those concepts, those few concepts that I have come to see are not true, like betrayal and rejection and being used by others, right? As I come to see those few concepts are not real and I let them go, they literally disappear from my world. I mean, literally, I no longer perceive betrayal. I no longer perceive rejection. I no longer perceive people using each other. Now, other people may perceive these things, and they may think that I'm in some kind of crazy denial because these things are very real to them. But I actually know better. I know better. Because of the way this has occurred for me. So I know from my own experience, even with a few concepts, that when a concept is sincerely released and no longer thought in the mind, that perception no longer exists. So when I ask the question, am I aware of as much world as I once was when I was attached to more concepts, the answer is no, I am not as aware. I don't have you could say, the same world, or I don't have as much world. I no longer have a world with betrayal in it. I no longer have a world with rejection in it. I no longer have a world where people are just using each other. It's not how I see. That is not my world. So I have, even though I still have a world, I do also have evidence from my own direct experience that there is a direct relationship between concepts and world. And that as concepts are honestly and sincerely, not through belief, like I believe there's no such thing as rejection, right? But through honestly seeing that there's no such thing as rejection, I know that when concepts are released, the perception also disappears. So the answer to that question for me, am I aware of as much world as I once was when I was attached to more concepts, is no, I am not aware of as much world. Those things do not exist for me anymore. And then the next question, is there a direct relationship that I witness between my thoughts, beliefs, and concepts and the world as I experience it now? Okay, this is asking me to look at where I'm not yet healed. As I mentioned, I can still see people, this is my perception, making what I would say are wrong choices. Choices that are not in their best interests. I can still see that. I can pause and look at that with Holy Spirit and in the moment let go of that perception, right? But then what happens is in another situation it shows up again and I have to practice the forgiveness again. So it's not a dead idea like rejection is. I don't have to practice forgiveness on rejection. That's a dead idea. But the idea that people can make wrong choices is not a dead idea. It's an idea I have to actively, I don't use the word have to actually because it doesn't feel like I have to. It feels like I can, it feels better, I can actively practice forgiveness on and release it so it only hangs in the mind for a moment when it shows up. But I still practice the forgiveness. So if we look at this next question, is there a direct relationship that I witness between my thoughts, beliefs, and concepts and the world as I experience it now? What that means is if I still, even momentarily, you know, for a short time, perceive people making wrong choices, can I look back at my mind and say that belief is there? And the answer is, hell yes, I can. I can say that I still believe there can be wrong choices. That's why I see them. And in fact, if you want to really test this, even if you have never truly forgiven any concept, let's say there's not a single concept that's dead for you yet. And so that question, am I aware of as much world as I once was, that question doesn't apply to you because you still believe every concept you've ever believed. So you don't have something to test it on like I did. You can still test this last question. Every time you think you see something, you think you see someone being jealous of someone else, right? You're not even the one feeling the jealousy. You just see the jealousy. You can stop and ask, do I believe in jealousy? Do I believe in, you know, specialness and ideas that if specialness doesn't go the way it's imagined, that there can be jealousy? Do I still believe in this? You'll say, hell yes, I believe in jealousy. Yes, I do. That's why I experience it myself or I see it in others. You can test this. Every single time you see something like that, you can ask, do I believe in this? Of course you do. How in the world could you say she is jealous of him without a concept of jealousy in your mind? You know, a really good movie, if you haven't seen it yet, is The Invention of Lying. The Invention of Lying, and by lying, in case you happen to have the image of lying down, I mean, you know, like telling lies, fibbing. The Invention of Lying is a great movie to demonstrate that if you don't have the concept in your mind, you cannot see it. It's not a part of your world. in the invention of lying, in the world, no one has ever thought to lie. And everyone is honest. Everyone, no matter what. So, because the concept of lying does not exist, the experience of lying does not exist. And then what happens, and I don't want to give too much away, so I'm not going to go into detail. I think it'd be great if you saw the film if you haven't seen it. But then what happens is one guy accidentally discovers the opportunity of lying. You could call it the tiny mad idea. He's in a situation where somebody misunderstands him, and then the thought occurs to let them keep that misunderstanding, to lie. That might benefit him. The tiny mad idea. And so he now is the only one with the concept of lying. And, you know, so he begins lying for his own benefit, and everyone else, since they do not have the concept, they do not see him as lying. And that's all I'll say. Go watch the film if you haven't seen it. It's a great movie. But that's what this teaching is saying. This teaching is saying if there is not a concept, there is not a world. The whole world's substance comes from concepts. And what this journal entry is saying is I don't have to believe that. I don't have to take that on faith. I can actually test that within myself and see if there is a direct relationship between what I believe and what I see. So number 215, what proof do I have that the world is a projection of concepts, and without concepts there is no world? Am I aware of as much world as I once was when I was attached to more concepts? Is there a direct relationship that I witness between my thoughts, beliefs, and concepts and the world as I experience it now? All right, we can scroll down and click on number 216. I will also post the link to number 216 in the room. And I am going to read from The Seven Steps to Awakening, number 216. The mind bewildered, which mistakes the body for oneself, conceives the transient world of names and forms, makes it seem real and lovable, and promptly entraps one in the strong, elusive bondage of desire. I'll read that again. The mind bewildered, which mistakes the body for oneself, conceives the transient world of names and forms, makes it seem real and lovable, and promptly entraps one in the strong, elusive bondage of desire. All right, let's look at the journal. What desires keep me attached to the world as real, and keep I attached to this body as me? With subtle inner looking, where do these attachments exist? What concepts hold me prisoner as a person in a body, in a world? And I personally don't actually feel like a prisoner at all. But these are the words that came through, so these are the words that were written. And I suppose even though I don't feel like a prisoner, you know, if you use a prisoner as an analogy, a prisoner cannot just come and go. And even though I do not feel like a prisoner, I'm actually quite happy. It is true that I cannot come and go from this world. So So I suppose I'm a happy prisoner. Now again, I am not changing beliefs for beliefs anymore. I'm done with that. I don't see any benefit to that. So when my teachers say that desire entraps one in the world, I do not adopt that as a belief and then bark it out. Yeah, well, desire is what keeps us here. Yep, it's all about, I mean, if we didn't desire the world, we wouldn't be here. That just doesn't feel helpful to me at all anymore. Instead, I immediately take what my teachers are saying and I look back at me and I say, okay, with subtle inner looking, are there desires? Can I find within myself a desire for the world, a desire to be this person, Regina? In spite of how much I feel that I want to awaken, in spite of how much that I feel I am ready to let go of Regina and let go of the world, when I look, do I see desires that are still there? And of course, the answer is yes. A desire popped up yesterday, and by popped up, I mean popped up into my awareness. And maybe the best way to describe that desire is what I would call the desire for a future. You know, like I've found that I am very happy, honestly and sincerely, I am very happy, and I enjoy being in the world as things unfold. And you guys have watched me, you know that, you know, the enjoyment was not stopped, you know, when the sewer blew up, and you know the enjoyment was not stopped when the error was found on the last 2 years' taxes and things had to go back and be redone. You know, these things do not get in the way of the enjoyment. And that seemed pretty good. In fact, that seemed to me to be without attachment. I had no attachment to whether there's a sewer blowing up in my house or not. I had no attachment to whether the taxes were done right and easily or not. You know, I mean, so it seemed like non-attachment. But just yesterday, in my personal looking, with the help of the Seven Steps to Awakening, of course, it's guiding me, I saw there was a very subtle attachment. It's so subtle that in an earlier time I never would have been able to see it. But it's still an excitement, an anticipation, a looking forward to what will unfold next. A willingness to enjoy whatever it is. I don't need it to be a certain way, but still that wanting something to unfold next. The best way to say it. Wanting something, wanting this adventure to continue. That's an attachment. It's not the same kind of attachments I used to discover, you know, like, oh, I don't want my sewer to blow up. That's an attachment. It's not those same kind of attachments, but there are still attachments here. And that makes perfect sense because I still experience a world. I still experience myself as a person. So there must be attachments that's keeping that in place. And I am happy to allow guidance to show me those attachments. Now, what I don't engage in is, the word that's coming to mind is self-flogging. Beating myself up because I have attachments, beating myself up because I don't know what those attachments are. I don't engage in self-flogging. I engage in inquiry. I engage in the willingness to see, the willingness to discover, the willingness to let all ideas be undone. So it's a very present, very happy process for me. But there is a willingness not to be in denial. And so to allow whatever isn't seen yet to come up and to be seen. And then what do I do? What do I do with the fact that I discovered yesterday that there is an attachment to wanting the story to continue to unfold, to being willing to enjoy it no matter how the story goes, but I still want it there, right? What do I do with that? Well, obviously I laugh at it. You've heard me laughing just now. I'm aware of it now. And there is what I'm going to call a subtle releasing that occurs. So like now that it's in awareness, now when I see the thought that is, you know, that is that thought of wanting a future, I look at it with this awareness of I don't really want that anymore. Like now that it's seen, I realize I don't really want that anymore. Now I'm not saying it's a dead thought. That's more back to what we would call I'm practicing forgiveness on it. It's not a dead thought in me, but it is a thought that I am aware of now, or an attachment that I'm aware of. And then there's an awareness that it is something that's keeping me tied to the world, tied to the belief that I'm this person. And because I really do want to awaken to truth, now when it appears, I meet it with that awareness. And I would call that practicing forgiveness. And as the forgiveness continues, I have no doubt that the time will come, whether it's, you know, an experience, whether it's tomorrow or 10 years from now, I can't say. But there's no doubt in me that if this continues to be met with this awareness, that at some point this attachment will die. And that's when the feeling I'm having now is to say that I'm sucked up in the present moment. Sucked up completely in the present moment. And this is not hard for me to imagine because this is what I experience, for example, when I'm teaching. When I'm teaching, I'm in that zone. You know, athletes talk about the zone. When I teach, I'm in that zone. I'm sucked into the present moment. There's no thought about what I might need to say to people, how I might work this into the talk later. There's nothing. There's no thought at all of looking forward. There's just here and now. And I know that if that present experience can happen during teaching, that present experience can happen always. But I have this little attachment, right? This little, you know, still wanting the adventure. So we'll look at that and we'll laugh at that and it will die when it dies. So, what desires keep me attached to the world as real and keep I, or you could call this awareness, beingness, attached to this body as me? With subtle inner looking, where do these attachments exist? What concepts hold me prisoner as a person in a body in a world? Inquiry, looking. Hey, Mary Beth. I know you're on next. It's good to see you. I talked to Mary Beth on the phone a couple days ago, which was a lot of fun. I think she and I have only talked on the phone twice, and the last time was many years ago. And then Mary Beth, Friday afternoon, Jasmine, Danielle, and I went to Florence, Colorado, buying popcorn and eating barbecue and antique shopping. And there was a woman in the antique store who looked very, very much like you and even kind of sounded like you. And I just said to Danielle, I said, Danielle, who does that woman remind you of? And Danielle looks up and she goes, Mary Beth. So it's almost like I got to see you twice and now here you are again three times in 1 week. Wow. That's something, huh? All right. Let's scroll down and click on number 217, which is on the left. And I am going to give you a link to number 217 for anyone who wants to read that along with me. But of course, before we go to the journal, I'm going to read number 217 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, and here it is. The empirical world of jostling names and forms is false and has no real existence in bright, full awareness. Oh, I love this symbol. Listen to this symbol. Like a ring of fire formed in the dark when one whirls fast a glowing joss stick, 'tis an illusion mind created. So imagine that. Imagine that you're at some kind of a fair, nighttime celebration, and there's some guy that has this glowing stick, and he's spinning it really fast. And don't you appear to see a ring of fire or a ring of light? But there is no ring of fire or ring of light. It's one stick spinning very quickly, so that's an illusion. We also know, you know, like the sun rising and the sun setting, that is an illusion. That's our perspective. That's how we see, but that is not truth, right? The empirical world of jostling names and forms is false and has no real existence in bright, full awareness. Like a ring of fire formed in the dark, when one whirls fast a glowing joss stick, 'tis an illusion mind created. All right, let's look at number 217 in the journal. What is an illusion? This is how this came to me as I began to ask. You know, we use that word illusion a lot. We throw it around. But really, what is an illusion? And what I came to, and this is the first time I saw it with this clarity, is it is something that can be sensed, or we could say can be perceived, although it isn't there, like that ring of fire. There is no ring of fire, yet I can see a ring of fire, right? So what is an illusion? It is something that can be sensed. We can see it, or we can hear it, or we can smell it, although it isn't there. That's an illusion. With this realization, it must be understood then that sensing something as present is not evidence that it is there. And this is very important. Going forward, as I continue in this inquiry, this point is very important. One thing about step two for me is all of the points build on each other. So, you know, I've told people I find it very difficult to share, you know, like one quote out of my journal from step two, because when you, any one quote is taken out of context. Step two has to be looked at as a whole. And this is a part of what has to be considered as we move forward with step two. What has to be considered is this realization that just because I can touch it, just because I can hear it, smell it, taste it, see it, that is not evidence that it is there. That is not evidence. Later we'll look at, you know, more, we'll ask more questions about what is evidence of reality. But the five senses are not evidence of reality, because the five senses perceive illusion like the ring of fire that comes from the glowing joss stick. Now, maybe for you that's nothing. Maybe this is something you truly realized and accepted a long time ago. But for me, this was the first day that dawned in the mind with absolute clarity. Until then, you know, I may have been walking around saying the world is an illusion. But in reality, there was still great belief in the world because I sense it, because I can reach out and grab it, I can smell it, I can taste it, right? And it was not until this day, February 7th, 2012, that it hit me that senses verify illusion. They don't know the difference. And if senses verify illusion, I cannot trust senses to tell me the difference between illusion and reality. I need a different criteria, a different judge. What is an illusion? It is something that can be sensed, although it isn't there. With this realization, it must also be understood then, hold on, a little dialogue box just popped up in my face. Okay, with this realization, it must also be understood then that sensing something as present is not evidence that it is there. And I'll leave you with that. We're going to go have popcorn as we always do on Sunday nights, but this time instead of plain popcorn, we have all kinds of flavors to mix in it. I think I'm going to have mango popcorn and butter rum popcorn mixed in with my regular popcorn. I think Danielle has cherry and banana walnut. And Jasmine has pizza and something. I don't remember what her other flavor is. But it's time for me to go. So you guys have fun. I'll be back tomorrow. Bye-bye.